It is a great day for men to marry men and women to marry women. Because like any day, it is a great day to be in love.
I decided to make our house because when I was growing up as the daughter of a lesbian mom, I had a real sense of isolation. I wasn't aware that there were other children of lesbians and gays out there.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Vatican pressure banishes world pride from Rome, and people like us are silenced in Singapore. Hundreds of vows are exchanged at the Millennium March's mega wedding, and a TV documentary about gay and lesbian families opens the doors to our house. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Leo Garcia.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending May 27th, 2000. July's World Pride 2000 celebration took a blow this week when authorities decided it must be moved out of the center of Rome, citing concerns for public order. In fact, the decision resulted from a private agreement between Prime Minister Giuliano Amato and the Vatican, which, along with right-wing politicians, has insisted that World Pride is an affront to the Vatican's celebration of the Jubilee year. Planning for World Pride began in December 1996, before the Vatican had begun its own planning for the Jubilee observance, and World Pride events had already been located well away from the Vatican itself. To add insult to injury, the permits that were refused to World Pride were quickly granted for some of the same venues to some right-wing groups' counter-protests. Gays and lesbians responded with a demonstration outside the parliament, while inside, Prime Minister Amato pleased right-wingers by sounding as if he regretted the necessity of allowing gays and lesbians their constitutional right to assembly. World Pride has had consistent support from Rome's mayor, and some left-wing political parties are joining in. But at this time, just where its 10 days of activities and big march can be held is unclear.
A permit was also denied this week for what would have been Singapore's first major public gay and lesbian event. The group People Like Us had billed the meeting as an opportunity to consider how gays and lesbians fit into the government's Singapore 21 program to increase participation in society, a program whose slogan is, "Everyone Counts." People Like Us even performed a survey of almost 500 Singaporeans, finding a high level of opposition to employment discrimination and a high level of acceptance for gay and lesbian family members. But police wrote that they could not allow the holding of this forum, which will advance and legitimize the cause of homosexuals in Singapore. The mainstream moral values of Singaporeans are conservative, and the penal code has provisions against certain homosexual practices. It will therefore be contrary to the public interest to grant a public entertainment license.
There was some happier news for gays and lesbians in some U.S. Protestant denominations this week. The highest church court of the 2.6 million member Presbyterian Church USA upheld two rulings favorable to gays and lesbians. The Permanent Judicial Council of the General Assembly affirmed that the denomination's 1997 ban against ordaining sexually active gays and lesbians as ministers, deacons, or elders applies strictly to ordination. New Jersey gay Graham Van Curen had advanced along the road to ordination from inquirer to candidate status. But because he has declared his intention to someday have a partnership with another man, conservatives felt he should not even be a candidate. The court said candidates' manner of life should be evaluated just before ordination. The Permanent Judicial Council also affirmed that congregations and ministers can choose to bless same-gender couples as long as it's very clear that those ceremonies are not marriages. After a New York church celebrated the holy union of a gay male couple in 1998, conservatives complained that it was no different from marriage. They also maintained that it was wrong to bless relationships which violated traditional standards for sexual conduct. The court said no law had been violated, although it gave instructions for further clarifying the distinction between holy unions and marriages. The Presbyterian Church does not have a law prohibiting holy unions and does have a policy granting wide latitude for services of blessing, including those that might involve two persons of the same gender. But that could all change in late June when the denomination's highest legislative body, the General Assembly, meets. A proposal to explicitly ban holy unions has already been put forward by three regional bodies called synods.
Holy unions are also now permitted in two synods of the 5.2 million member Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, following votes held in May. Wisconsin's Greater Milwaukee Synod was the first of the 65 ELCA regional bodies to greenlight the ceremonies, and the Detroit area Southeast Michigan Synod announced this week that it had followed suit. The ELCA does not have a law against blessing same-gender couples, but a 1993 advisory from its bishops denounced them.
Washington will become only the fifth U.S. state to extend health insurance coverage to the same-gender partners of its own government workers, following a 6-to-1 vote of the Public Employees Benefits Board this week. The larger of the two unions of state workers had been preparing to sue the state to win domestic partner benefits. But the state is short of funds right now, so the additional cost will have to be shared by all the state's workers. That's the only reason for the single nay vote on the board and opposition by the smaller state workers' union. Democratic Governor Gary Locke, who appoints all but one of the board members, had asked them to approve the benefit to take effect January 1st. That enraged the state's Republican legislators, who felt Locke had assured them he would oppose the benefit when they were developing the state budget. They're determined to make it an election issue, and so is a new coalition of religious right groups, which is also planning a court challenge.
There was an unpleasant surprise for California gays and lesbians, though, as Democratic Governor Gray Davis vetoed a bill to extend to domestic partners the right for one to take extended leave from work when the other is seriously ill. Currently, workers can only do this for an ailing parent, minor child, or legally married spouse. The vetoed bill would have added several other relationships. Davis said in his veto message that the bill was too broadly written, but that in the future he would work with lawmakers to enact parts of it. Davis will probably have to decide on several bills this year that would add substance to the largely symbolic statewide domestic partners registry he signed into law last year.
Some Canadian gay and lesbian couples are applying for marriage licenses towards a lawsuit to win full equal marriage rights. They've already won in the courts and some provinces legal status equal to unmarried heterosexual couples, and a bill to give them that same status nationally is now before the Senate. This week, Judy Lightwater and Cynthia Callahan applied in Victoria, British Columbia, fully expecting to be rejected. But at the end of last week, Toronto activist couple Michael Leshner and Michael Stark were surprised when their application was not rejected, but was put on hold while the city seeks an opinion from an Ontario court. Attorney Martha McCarthy, victor in the landmark MVH Supreme Court case, called this the first time ever government has taken a proactive stand. Toronto Director of Legal Services Paul Jones was more modest, saying that in light of MVH and other recent rulings, the city's simple public servants just don't know anymore how to proceed. Activists were pleased that the cost of coming up with that answer will for once come out of public coffers instead of their own pockets.
Party politics took an unusual turn in Canada this week. The anti-abortion Campaign Life Coalition's website strongly criticized Tom Long, one of four candidates hoping to lead the new Alliance Party, saying his staff included two self-proclaimed homosexuals and a strongly pro-gay campaign manager. Flyers were distributed with the same message, driving one of the gay Long staffers to go visit and come out to his parents. But even though the Alliance is the most socially conservative of Canada's major political parties, it's eager to overcome the reputation for bigotry that tarred its predecessor, the Reform Party. So the immediate result of the homophobic attack against the Long campaign was that he and all three of the other candidates for Alliance leader promptly denounced its intolerance, affirmed the rights of gays and lesbians to full participation in the political process, and welcomed them into the party. Even Stephen Stockwell Day, a minister who has reached out to the religious right for support more than the other candidates and has an anti-gay track record from his years as an Alberta legislator, made a joke that, "I don't care what they do in the bedroom as long as they don't take too long, because there's a lot of work to do in this campaign."
The legendary Sir John Gielgud died this week at the age of 96. In some 80 years as a working actor, he took only 4 weeks off, performing countless times on stage, radio, recordings, television, and more than 50 films, winning top honors in every medium. The last 40 years of his life were shared with his devoted partner, Martin Hensler. Before Hensler came into his life, and shortly after he was knighted in 1953, Gielgud was arrested in a public restroom on charges of gross indecency, which made his sexual orientation very public indeed. There was an outcry in the UK from conservatives now embarrassed by his knighthood. He faced some problems with obtaining visas to travel to the US, and the situation was very painful for Gielgud, but generally it turned out to win more sympathy for gay and lesbian civil rights.
And finally, there was a sale at Christie's East Auction House in New York City this week of the ultimate piece of movie memorabilia, a pair of the ruby slippers Judy Garland wore in the filming of The Wizard of Oz. A half dozen of the size 6 sparklers were made for the film, of which only 4 are known to exist today. The current pair were last sold in 1988 for $165,000. But this time, Los Angeles dealer David Elkaby went way over the rainbow with his winning bid of $666,000.
That's News Wrap for the week ending May 27th, 2000. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Leo Garcia.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
Children of lesbian and gay parents come out on U.S. public television. After more of our continuing coverage of the Millennium March on Washington and surrounding events, here's This Way Out's Lucia Chappell.
To the question your eyes seem to send, am I your passion, your promise, your end? I say I am. Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
Hundreds of same-gender couples congregated in Washington, D.C. on April 29th, the day before the Millennium March for Equality, to celebrate their relationships at a mass commitment ceremony. The wedding, now more than ever, was originally going to be held in front of the Internal Revenue Service to protest the denial of tax benefits to gay and lesbian partners. But the huge number of couples pre-registering for the ceremony made it necessary to move it to the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. There, under sunny skies, the presence of picketing anti-gays in the distance did not dampen the couple's jubilant spring wedding spirit, as the Reverend Elder Troy Perry of the Universal Fellowship of Metropolitan Community Churches began the service.
I want to welcome all of you, over 3,000 couples gathered here today in front of the Lincoln Memorial. What a great day this is for us. This last week, the state of Vermont signed into law the first state in the union to make legal civil unions for our community. Standing here this morning are really part of the last frontier, the last thing that will probably happen from our government. But it will happen. One day you will be able to walk, march, move in to the county clerks in the states you come from. And one day we will be able to marry legally, because we will continue this struggle. The former executive director of the Whitman Walker Clinic and one of the first openly gay city council members of Washington, D.C., from the first ward, Mr. Jim Graham.
It is a great day to be married. It is a great day for men to marry men and women to marry women. Because like any day, it is a great day to be in love.
And now, my co-celebrant of this wonderful, wonderful event, would you welcome Reverend Elder Darlene Garner?
Good morning, beloved. We are here to celebrate our love. We are here to proclaim to those who may not know that we are here in love. We are here saying to our government that we are full citizens of this country. Right now, as couples, we are human beings without legal rights in 49 states. But we only have 49 more to go. One day from the east and the west, from the north and the south, we will enjoy parental rights, job security, equal housing opportunity, insurance benefits for our families, hospital visitation rights, adoption rights, inheritance rights, tax breaks, and the right to marry the person we love. Though he needs no introduction, I will introduce him anyway. Reverend Jimmy Creech.
I want to say to you today that there is no power on this earth, no government, no church, no synagogue, no temple, no institution, no custom that has the authority to tell you who you cannot love. We have much to do to earn equal rights for all people of this country, regardless of sexual orientation and gender identity. We have much to do, but the thing I want you to embrace this day and always is the trust that the divine reality, whoever we call that divine reality, whatever name we use, whatever religious tradition we follow in celebrating that divine reality in our midst, I want you to understand that that divine reality is within you, that you were created by that divine reality. You are the result of that divine reality. That divine reality wants you to be who you are and has placed within you the capacity to love and expects you to love someone, not told to you by someone else, not dictated as to whom you are to love and who you cannot love, but the one in whose eyes you find paradise.
We ask before this ceremony that each of you bring a token of your covenant. At this time, I would ask that the individual member of the couple to my right take that gift, whether it is a ring, a bracelet, a pin, or some other token, even if it's just a kiss of your affection. Repeat after me, and then give your token of affection to your partner. I give you this gift as a token of our covenant, vowing to live together in close friendship and love, and to strive for fuller knowledge of your being, and to care for you above all others. I pledge myself to recognize your needs and to encourage your full potential and to love you even as I love myself. May love dwell between you and me forever. And now will the couple on the person on my left take the token and repeat after me. I give you this gift as a token of our covenant, vowing to live together in close friendship and love, and to strive for fuller knowledge of your being, and to care for you above all others. I pledge myself to recognize your needs and to encourage your full potential, and to love you even as I love myself. May love dwell between you and me forever.
For as much as each of these couples have declared their love, one for the other, and have given tokens of their covenant each to the other, and have done this willingness before their friends gathered here, as well as before the larger American community, I proclaim together our rights as couples in hopes that the day will come when not only will our own community recognize our relationships, but the law of this country also. Couples, you may kiss. God bless you and thank you.
The wedding, now more than ever, was led by the Universal Fellowship of Metropolitan Community Churches, Reverend Elder Troy Perry. Tune in for more highlights from the Millennium March on Washington and surrounding events in the weeks to come. For This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell.
Hello, I'm Michelangelo Signorelli, and you're listening to This Way Out, the international radio program for all of our sexually diverse communities.
Our House, a very real documentary about kids of gay and lesbian parents, is an insightful video that's jumping from the Queer Film Festival circuit to the U.S. public airwaves of PBS during the next few weeks. This Way Out, Steve Pride recently spoke with the film's creator, Mima Spadola, and he has a preview.
What does it mean to grow up with two mothers or two fathers? What happens when your mother or father leaves a heterosexual marriage for a same-sex union? Unlikely questions? Not really. Today, there are an estimated 2 million gay and lesbian parents, raising between 3 and 5 million children. Some of these children were born into heterosexual marriages where a parent has since come out. But an increasing number are the adopted or biological children of gay or lesbian parents. Our House. A one-hour documentary by Mima Spadola that's airing nationally on PBS stations throughout the month of June takes a close look at these kids of gay and lesbian parents.
I've spent my whole life explaining my family to other people who don't get it.
The question that I get asked the most is, you call them both mom? Well, how do you tell them apart?
What's the one thing that you wish people understood about having a gay dad?
I'm not a freak.
If they make fun of it, I get real mad and I'm gonna beat them up.
It's just another thing for kids to pick on each other about. You know they do it. Give them another reason, it's just gonna make it that much worse.
I love my dad, but sometimes, you know, I think about if things were different. You know, if he wasn't gay.
Recently, I spoke with filmmaker Mima Spadola about her documentary, Our House.
I decided to make Our House because when I was growing up as the daughter of a lesbian mom, I had a real sense of isolation. I wasn't aware that there were other children of lesbians and gays out there, and I certainly never saw anything on TV, didn't read books, didn't hear anything on the radio, was completely isolated without a community of other sons and daughters of gay and lesbian parents. There are five families in our house. There's one family from Long Island. There are five adopted kids with their two dads.
From our house, Mima Spadoza with Jessica, age 9, and Daniel, age 13.
Do you ever tell people at school?
No. It's hard to explain. Like, they find out, and then they ask me, and I say, it's just like a mom and a dad, because my papa's like a mom. It's like what moms do, my dad's. Like a dad, like regular dad.
Do kids bother you at school, Daniel?
No, but a lot of them feel surprised when they first, when I first tell them. But they get over that.
How do you tell them?
They have two fathers, and then they get the picture after that. So I don't really have to say anymore.
And then from Long Island, we go to Arkansas, where Ryan and Carrie are being raised by their two moms, so they're a blended family.
In this segment of Our House, we meet 15-year-old Ryan, who has been teased, taunted, and abused by schoolmates. Nonetheless, she was thrilled when her mother, Sophia, and her mother's lover decided to have a commitment ceremony.
She told me one time, I don't want Vicky for you, I want her for me. Ryan, I think, had an insight about what she needed as she grew older. things that I had no knowledge of, no way to give her certain things. You know, Vicky and her go shopping and they put on makeup together and they curl their hair and they do all this kind of stuff that I have no idea of how to do, you know, at all.
Our House also introduces the viewer to wonderfully diverse families in Arizona and New Jersey before it finds its way back to Mima Spadola's hometown, New York City.
Where Rye and Cade, Rye is 18 years old, Cade is 19, and they're being raised by their two moms who conceived them through donor insemination, and they were really definitely on the beginning end of the huge number of women who are doing donor insemination now. And what's interesting about them is that the older daughter, Cade, has come out as a lesbian.
I feel it's really important to be out. I feel it's really harmful to be closeted. And I like making people uncomfortable because I like watching their expression change as they realize that I'm a dyke.
This is, I think, the fear that right-wing people sort of puts out there as being, this is what possibly could go wrong, is that you'd have gay parents turn their kids gay. So I really purposely wanted to represent a family where there was a second-generation gay or lesbian kid, because I think that, you know, I don't want to participate in saying that, see, these parents are okay because they make straight kids.
And what does Mima want you to take away from Our House?
You know, it's crazy to think that we have to justify ourselves as families or prove that we're families, but in so many places we do have to prove ourselves, and in so many places we do have to prove that, you know, we're okay, that our parents are okay. And I think that people can't help but see that the families in Our House truly are, you know, families, and that they love each other and they get on each other's nerves and they get into the same fights and they, you know, go on the same, you know, car trips and they do all the same things, and that, you know, the problems arise when the outside world, whether it's neighbors or teachers or classmates or people in the church or, you know, elected officials start creating problems.
To find out when Our House will be playing in your area, consult local listings or log on to the Collage website. Collage is Children of Lesbians and Gays Everywhere, and you can find it at www.collage.org. For This Way Out, this has been Steve Pride.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Leo Garcia, Brian Nunes, Graham Underhill, Jason Lynn, Chris Ambage, Martin Rice, Rex Walkner, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Thanks also to Alan Wiley and Planet Out. Melissa Etheridge, Madness, and Sister Sledge performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by grants from the Gill Foundation, the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, and by Query.com at www.queery.com by Planet Out, from designated contributions by Uncommon Cloud Visa card holders who've chosen This Way Out, and through direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. For audio cassette information or with any questions or comments about This Way Out, please email us at tworadio@aol.com. Visit our webpage at thiswayout.org or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. And please be sure to include the call letters of this station. Remember, you can also hear This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. Just point your browser to www.planetout.com and click first on Multimedia, then on Radio. For Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. We all thank you for listening on KALW San Francisco, California, WCSB Cleveland, Ohio, CFUV Victoria, British Columbia, and more than 100 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And everybody's going to stay tuned.